You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast.
Number 185, Red Shelf, interview with Greg Fenton. That short teaser is from a very famous piano piece by Erik Satie called Gymnopédie No. 1. Listen to the full song at the end of my podcast. Today's podcast episode is sponsored by D2L. You may know their main product, the Brightspace Learning Management System. I, of course, would only accept sponsorship from companies and products that I'm very fond of, so please check out their website at d2l.com/pulsepodcast to learn more. In the interest of full disclosure, my institution, the University of the Sciences, uses D2L Brightspace. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to the things we talk about on my show notes website at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. This episode is my interview with Greg Fenton. He's the CEO and co-founder of Red Shelf. We discuss the Red Shelf publishing platform, offering nearly 700,000 digital titles from most publishers at a significant discount, including all of their study tools. We discuss how they got started, how they can compete against Amazon, how they offered free access to all students because of COVID-19. We talk about how they deliver the publisher's ebook content and what makes e-textbooks better than print. They have read aloud, flashcards, study guides. We discuss their business model and more, including their future directions, including inclusive access. So without further ado, here's my interview with Red Shelf's Greg Fenton.
Greg, thank you so much for agreeing to speak with me today about Red Shelf. I'm very excited to learn about it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, before we get into the details of Red Shelf, I didn't hear about Red Shelf until recently. So why don't you start out by first telling me a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with Red Shelf.
Yeah, so we've been around for a little while. It was kind of a dorm room project that one of my good friends and I started, and it absorbed most of my 20s there afterwards. But how we got started was actually solving one of our own problems, which was effectively note sharing. And so, you know, if we didn't go to class, we wanted notes from one of our former classmates, we would just walk down the hall or ask them for them. But we started a website where you could actually kind of trade and buy and sell these notes. And so what started off with just solving a simple problem of not going to class evolved into more of a full-blown note-sharing website, which, long story short, that didn't really work out. It kind of was in between the ethical and unethical lines, and we were young and we didn't think much of it. But by the time we had graduated, we had fully converted that into trying to solve the textbook problem, where we were kind of sick of buying $200-$300 textbooks and realized if those same items went digital, the publishers could dramatically cut their cost and the students would be much more happy with more of a, you know, digital rental model. And so that really launched what Red Shelf is today. But it was just originally started from solving a 19-year-old's desire to not go to class, which is obviously the complete opposite of what we're trying to accomplish today.
Right. I certainly sympathize with that as a student. I know my daughter went to NYU and, you know, very expensive textbooks. One of them, and then when she actually transferred, I tried to sell one of them online. You couldn't even sell it because it was a $200 textbook that was, I guess, produced by NYU, and I couldn't resell it on Amazon or anything. So I understand a lot of the issues. How do you, I'm going to ask you more about the technology in a moment, but how do you compete against Amazon? I think a lot of our students probably just go onto Amazon and buy a textbook there.
Yeah. I mean, and Amazon is still the predominant player in textbook distribution, but our business is really focused more on university contracts and working with campus bookstores. And so, whereas a student that will go online and buy from Amazon, it's just kind of a different demographic than what we're going for. What we're going for is more of a campus-led initiative to go digital, or maybe it's a bookstore, an independent bookstore on campus that wants to be able to offer these to their students. And so there's a certain demographic, which is about 50 to 60% of college students, where they're not going to Amazon either for financial reasons or convenience reasons. And those students need to be served by the institution. And so we targeted that channel and kind of grew up and built our business through there, whereas Amazon has played and stayed in the more B2C market.
Right, right. Yeah, I can. A couple of years ago, my institution got rid of our bookstore, and we do everything, online through a reseller. And of course, I don't know what the stats are, but I still know a lot of students go to Amazon to buy their textbook. But now with the people moving to online, and boy, with the coronavirus, in fact, all of our on-ground courses right now, starting this week, were to be taught online. Students were encouraged to go to their permanent residence and commute online. And I can understand how, especially for students that are looking for an online program to begin with, why should they have to have textbooks that are so inconvenient and hard to carry around. So I imagine you've seen quite a growth with the increase in online.
Oh, yes. It's definitely opening up a can of worms there. So we actually just this morning came out with a free ebook program for any students that are already enrolled. And so there's a lot of students right now that, they're asked to go home and their physical book is left in the dorm room, or they were on spring break and they're never going back to campus. And so with the publishers and the campus bookstores, we created this program almost overnight, which was pretty cool to see the market come together. And so we're helping serve those students so they have access for the remainder of the semester. It's a pretty big accomplishment from the community as a whole. But, it's times like this that everybody seems to come together, and it's when we're all at our best.
Yeah. I mean, explain that again. In other words, does the institution already have to have an agreement with you? How does that work again?
No, not really. They've got to be a student enrolled in an institution where they already have, effectively already have their content, have already bought something. And so what it really was the publisher and bookstore community wanted to say to the students, hey, if you got stranded, we'll make sure you're covered. So everybody's kind of foregoing royalties or foregoing platform fees. And so nobody's making any money on this. It's more of just saying, hey, it's a big community event, and let's make sure those students aren't stranded. It'll be business as normal for the summer school students, but the student that is at University of Alabama that just got back from spring break and was told to go home, they're stranded. And so publishers and campus bookstores and Red Shelf, we came together and created this program that launched actually at 10 a.m. this morning.
Wow. So this is very timely. So you told me about yourself and how Red Shelf got started. Which publishers do you work with?
At this point, almost all of them. We have about a million items in our database. When we originally started, it was just actually books like the ones you described, where we would work with the university and digitize their content. So course packs, lab manuals, kind of the campus by campus content. And then as we grew the business, we just signed on publisher after publisher. And at this point in time, yeah, we have basically all major publishers.
Now, my experience with publishers is, I'm sure they've caught up a lot these days, but they've been very reluctant to get into online textbooks. And my recollection is that each textbook publisher has a different kind of a platform to support, e-books or e-textbooks. How does it work? Do you take their content and put it into your own platform, or do you just sort of resell their platform?
Both, actually. So from the ebook standpoint, or the replica of that physical book that has been predominantly the use case for learning in general, when you get to the online learning, you get more courseware. And so you've got this kind of split where we do resell a lot of the courseware items, which is publisher software that we have rights to sell access to. But then for ourselves, we have an ebook platform we developed about 8-9 years ago. It was kind of our first beta testing platform, and even is actually an evolution of a platform from about 12, 13 years ago that was used for the notes. That platform can take any PDF, EPUB, EPUB 3, and convert it right into our standard ebook format. And so in that circumstance, the publishers feed us content every 24 hours. It's this kind of constant turnover of content and ingestion and conversion. But with the publisher's courseware, we just sell the access.
I see. Yeah, that I understand why that would make sense. I know with our own experience here, we've launched a number of totally online asynchronous courses this past January, graduate certificates and master's degrees. And, we're handling it fairly traditionally. They were given a list of textbooks and they would have to purchase them. And then we discovered that our library had some of them. But when we, in our syllabi, in the instructions would say, read chapters 2 through 5 and here are the page numbers. And the page numbers never seem to line up. Is that still an issue how's it work with page numbers and why are they different, with the online and the physical book?
Yeah. So what you're probably seeing there is a book that was printed before the publisher made a digital first version of it. And so a lot of times the publishers will have a book that, it's 2 or 3 years old and they make what's called an EPUB off of that. And the EPUB doesn't always line up with the exact page numbers. It's just kind of a different file format. And so I saw that a lot in the past, but that seems to be going away more and more. So I would say that I think the problem you're addressing here will naturally get solved as publishers do digital first, print second. But you're seeing that in between, aspect right now.
I see. Yeah, I understand. For my audience, in fact, a lot of our faculty probably don't have that much experience with online textbooks. What are some of the features that make the use of textbooks online better than the physical textbook?
Yeah, thanks for teeing me up on this one. So when I originally started the business, the goal was the financial side. Getting everything digital made all the sense in the world, and I knew the price would come down. But what I'm really excited about is actually the question you just asked, the second part of the plan, which is now that things are, content and books, et cetera, are digital in nature, what can we do to enhance those? And so some of the features that are pretty nice to have items for students are, we have an automated flashcard and study guide creator. So say you highlight something that you think is important, it'll automatically pull where it is in the book. It'll pull when you made that and it'll create a study guide for you. Another example would be like the flashcard. So you look up a word that you don't understand, it'll then ask you, would you like to turn that into a flashcard? So there's a lot of ways that is automating the study behavior for students. And then there's totally new things like read out loud, where a student could turn on a read out loud feature and read along with it, and or if the student is slower at reading, they can just listen to it, which is obviously not available from a print book. So those would be three highly used items that exist on our platform that don't really exist in a physical book.
Wow. Yeah. I certainly wish that was available when I was in school, but that was in ancient times. I always used to hear that students, even if they had an ebook available, especially if they were given one, they often want to have a hard copy. What's the trend these days? Do you see that changing? Do students still want to have a hard copy in some cases? Does it depend on the discipline, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's a really fair question. So, 10 years ago, when I was kind of feeling out the space, almost everybody, including myself, wanted the physical item because that's just what you're used to. Now, a decade later, it's a different generation. And if you think about the students right now that are kind of your traditional 18, 19-year-old students going into college, they don't really know a world without an iPhone. Whereas for me, I didn't even have a cell phone until I graduated high school. And so there's just a different degree of technology acceptance in the younger generation than even for myself, what I was used to. So yes, that's been a major topic over the last 10 years. But, you know, evidence from the crazy world we're in today with the virus and all the online learning to the digital, you know, advancements and everything, and to the fact that publishers are just converting their business models into digital only because the print market is just not really a sustainable market. There's major, major factors that are pushing everything forward into the digital realm. And I believe that the timing is probably appropriate now that the traditional 18, 19, 20-year-old students are coming into university expecting that.
Yeah, that's right. The other thing that occurs to me is how does your platform work? I mean, do local copies of a given textbook, are they downloaded to a device if they're walking around with them? I assume they're compatible with like iPads and other tablets as well. So what if they're traveling and they don't have internet? Can they read offline?
They can. So we're primarily a cloud-based solution. When a lot of the cloud infrastructure came out years ago, we knew that would be the major and predominant way that software was developed and used by people. So we launched heavy on that. At this point in time, there's a download feature you can use, but it's only for part of the book. We are coming out with apps this summer that allow the entirety of the book to be downloaded. And so it gives our true cross-platform capability where anywhere, you know, that you can access internet, you can access your notes, your content, et cetera. You can collaborate with other students. You know, it's all there, the whole nine yards. And then for the students that are traveling or don't have, you know, access to Wi-Fi, we are in the next couple months going to be offering a complete download solution through iOS or Android.
Wow. How do you protect something like that, though?
That is definitely one of the harder parts. So, you know, a big part of the platform that is obviously the interactivity, and that's the stuff that, you know, we consider the cool features, the things we want to, you know, really focus our time on. But absolutely necessary for us to focus a lot on DRM or document resource management. And so in an odd way, that's where we got kind of ourselves started, is, you know, protecting the notes and everything back in college when we had the note sharing website. And so we got quite good at the document security, which lended itself very well into the publisher community and the textbooks and all of the other items that we had to protect for the authors, the professors, the publishers, et cetera. So there's kind of, it's the tip of the iceberg is what you see. The majority of the code and the heavy software is behind the scenes, making sure all of the rights management, you know, billing, procurement, et cetera, is taken care of for the students and, you know, upstream for the authors and the publishers.
You know, some of the first very impressive looking textbooks I saw were on the iPad with Apple's platform, iBook, I guess it's called. I haven't heard much about that lately. Has that fallen behind? Is that still something?
Yes, I remember that. The image of the ant, and they were pulling the leg apart and diagnosing all of the different parts of the ant. I remember the presentation well because I was a little concerned that that might be the future of everything. It never really materialized from the academic market. I think Apple's done a wonderful job on the kind of leisure reading and novels, et cetera. But when it comes to the academic side, that platform is primarily built for professors to build content into it, whereas the publishers were more used to building their content and then having the aggregators like myself ingest it. And so, yeah, it's a great platform. It's just a different use case than what we saw in higher ed.
Yeah, I'd be curious to find out how popular that is these days with faculty that have the time to build their own textbook. What, in fact, that, I guess that's a good lead into what if I'm a full faculty member and I have some unique areas? Do I have to work through a publisher, or can I go directly to you?
It depends. If you have all the rights to your content, then you could go directly to us, and we would happily, you know, put that online for you, and you could even do it for free if you wanted on our platform, or you could charge, and we just do a revenue split on that. But if it is, you know, using other people's content in or any way outside of your own creation, you'd have to use a lot of the, you know, publishers. And there's a handful of self-publishers we work with that they're constantly working with professors to help get something published or take, you know, the published content, add imagery around it and kind of package that up. And so there's definitely hybrid solutions out there that seem to be the most popular. And we work with all of those publishers. But yeah, if you made your own stuff and you wanted it, you know, if it's in a Word format, you know, or a PDF, you could convert that and we could put it on the platform for you.
Very cool. Yeah, I have one book under my belt, which has been long out of print. Maybe I should talk to you about it.
Sure.
You know, everybody talks about video, and video is the lingua franca these days. So are more and more textbooks actually embedding video, or are they just linking out to YouTube videos, that sort of thing? How's that working these days?
Yeah, video, both, to answer your question. But one of the tricky things is it's very hard to have links in your book to an outside source, because that source could change at any point. And so most publishers, you know, or folks creating their own content are embedding videos into an EPUB 3 format. And so there's a lot of ways you can use multimedia now, from audio files to video files, interactivity, et cetera, that can be built right into the book itself. And that way you can protect that content. You can guarantee that it's going to be up and working. And so just a much more secure and stable way to build the kind of interactive book that people are looking for. But we still have a lot of folks that do provide a link to a YouTube or somewhere else that functionally works. Just if the video goes down, there's nothing that a Red Shelf or anybody else could do about that other than the source of where that link was being provided.
Right. Yeah, understood. Well, in terms of the your business model, how's it usually work? Do students purchase their books directly from you, or do the institution have an arrangement and they provide books to students? What's the breakdown of that sort of thing?
I feel like I've answered this way a few times, so I apologize, but both again. So many of our students can, they can go to redshelf.com, they can buy directly from us, but most of our kind of partnerships are with the university directly. And so I would answer it this way: 80 to 90% of our revenue, if you follow the money, is coming through university specific contracts where the student is getting their book by the university and or buying it through the university. And we're the supplier behind the scenes, the supplier aggregator that takes care of that for the school. For 10 to 20% of the students, they can go to redshelf.com and they can buy directly from us. But our primary business is focused on serving university needs and making sure they have, you know, the software and capabilities to handle any digital item that they want to get for their students.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. And that's been our philosophy here, not to nickel and dime our students. They already pay a lot in tuition, and it makes sense to save them some money, so not having to go out to buy their own expensive textbooks. So, yeah, it's a very attractive business plan. I'm sure you're going to be doing very well, especially with the move, everybody moving online. Is there anything else that you would like to cover? Anything new that's new technologies? I always like to hear about the latest and greatest. Is there anything else you can say about where you're moving in the future?
Sure. I've got two answers for you on that one. One of the biggest items right now is back to that question you just asked, which is about, you know, the university model and how we're working with the school directly. In that circumstance, it's called inclusive access, and it's becoming quite popular on college campuses where the departments, you know, or a professor will choose to go, as is called, inclusive. And what that means effectively is that when the students show up for class, the book's already there. They then can opt out if they don't want to pay for it or they think they can get a better price somewhere else. But what you're doing in that circumstance is negotiating a volume deal. So it's kind of like, it's like the Groupon model, if you're familiar with that, where you've got the volume play, and in return for volume, a provider gives a giant discount. And so the publishers are doing that. If a department says, we'll go all digital and we'll work with this publisher directly, you know, with Red Shelf, obviously, to serve it up, but with that publisher, and the publisher will give X, Y, or Z discount, they'll negotiate that with the department, and then the students automatically get that item, and they can opt out of it if they want to, but you end up getting a big volume discount. And so that's becoming very popular, and over the last 3 to 5 years, I'd say probably 20%+ of the market has implemented some form of inclusive program on campus. So that's growing very rapidly. And we're definitely involved with that one. But my second point would be one of the things I'm looking forward to are new technologies is actually the interactivity of these books. And so we've been building a platform for a while that it's not released yet, so I'll have to save that for a later date. But effectively, it'll allow a professor or a publisher to add questions directly in their book, add audio or video without having to create an EPUB file. And so we're taking a lot of the benefits of the technology we've seen, but we're making it far easier for folks to be able to implement. And once you get to a point where your book is fully integrated with question sets, you know, collaboration, interactivity, you really can get to a point where you have more of a flipped classroom mechanism, and or the professors can say, hey, read chapter two, and then we can send them aggregated data of what, you know, cohorts of students did or didn't understand, you know, an item or a part of the chapter or a question. And so when a professor goes back into the class the next day, they'll have a much better understanding of what students did and did not understand from those readings. So I'm very excited to launch that. I think it's going to be great for the education market. And now that we've gotten, you know, pretty far down the road of helping solve some of the pricing problems, and shout out to the market as a whole, it's the first time in I think ever, the textbook price has actually fallen the last couple of years. So the trajectory is it's going in the right direction finally. And I got to say, it was the publishers, the campus bookstores, the university administrators, everybody kind of came together on that one. So that was great to see. But now that the prices are getting more reasonable, you know, what else can we do with the technology is one of my favorite subjects and one of the biggest things we're working on here at RedShelf.
Well, that's very exciting, and I can see how that would, is that going to make some of the learning management system companies nervous? I mean, it almost seems like if you're building in exams and have a way to communicate that, do you see that product or that feature requiring, integration with the learning management system, or do you see people using it as a standalone product?
Definitely standalone, but it's in conjunction with the LMSs. So we have deep partnerships with them. And when it comes to real assessment, that's going to be more an LMS field. What I'm talking about is more reading comprehension and collaboration within the content. And so they definitely can live together. And there's of course a fine line there, but I would say that what I'm describing is more publisher courseware, and the assessment and some of the learning management tools are separate from that. So no, I don't see it being problematic.
Great. Well, I think this has been a great summary. It's the kind of thing that I think a lot of faculty are not even aware of, that some of these things exist, especially they've been using the same textbooks and year after year, and now they're forced to teach online, something that everybody should be looking into. So, Greg, I want to thank you for taking your time and telling me about RedShelf today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on the show.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the interview. I certainly learned a lot about publishing these days. Stay tuned for the full song, a very relaxing piece, as I think we need these days, from Eric Satie. Until next time, have a great week. Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company. Podcast.